The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to Breast Talk Tuesday. It's Dr. Lauren on Behind the Pink Mic, and we're talking about something that can change a hospital experience dramatically: inpatient palliative care. What it is, what it isn't, and how palliative care nurses help patients and families feel more comfortable, informed, and supported, especially during tough moments. We have in the studio with us this evening three nurses from the Dignity Health Palliative Care at Mercy Center in Redding, California: Michelle Woods, Mary Beasley, and Erin Raglan. But before we dive in, we're going to have our Pink Mic intern tell us about the Pink Teeny of the month.
Hey everyone, the Pink Teeny of the moment is mint plus honey glow up. Simple, soothing, and low-key powerful. Mint helps calm your stomach, freshen your breath, and ease digestion, while honey brings your natural sweetness, antioxidants, and immune support. Together, they're like a reset button in a cup. Cool, comforting, and good for your body and your mood. So if you need something to relax, refresh, and keep you feeling right, this minty Pink Teeny is your go-to.
All right. We are enjoying our Pink Teenies this evening. So welcome to the studio, ladies.
Thank you.
How you doing?
We're doing good.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, yes. I'm super excited. You know, last month we had the hospice care team in, and hospice/home health care, and tonight we have the palliative care busy team of nurses at Dignity, and I want to start off with introductions.
Okay.
Mary Beasley.
Good evening. My name is Mary Beasley. I have been a nurse at Mercy for the last 10 years and blessed to have been a palliative care nurse there. It truly is probably the hardest job I've ever had, but I love it. I love being able to help families in the position where they need palliative care.
Awesome. Michelle Woods.
I'm Michelle Woods, and I'm one of the team members of palliative care, and I can't tell you what an honor it is to be here with you, providing education for the community and the support that you do to step outside your role to provide information is truly incredible, and we are honored, and this is a lifetime opportunity for me. I've been around for a long time, and I don't get this excited. I'm actually breathless, so we'll move on to Erin.
Hey, Erin.
I'm sorry to follow. I am Erin Raglan. I have the fortunate ability to participate in palliative care with these ladies here, and it truly is a ministry for us. We work the whole hospital wide. I do work specifically in the ICU most generally. And I've been doing it just about 3.5 years now, and it's been a blessing. It truly has been my dream job, and every day I look forward to going to work and working with my teammates and truly trying to do our best to help these patients where they need it most.
That's awesome. So real quick, before we get into what is palliative care, how did you get into palliative care? Like, what drew you into palliative care roles?
Well, back in 2017, I was the oncology liaison for Mercy, and Sister Brenda knocked on my office door, and she said, "I need a palliative care nurse." And I said, "I don't even know what that is." Mm-hmm. She said, "Well, just pray about it and show up for the interview at 11 a.m. on Monday." And that was 2017, and here I am, 2026. I love the work. As Erin said, it's a ministry. Mm-hmm. That's the only way to describe this particular form of nursing. It is all heart, all love. And we really care about our patients, their families, and the team. We support each other to get through these tough days.
Yeah. How about you, Mary?
I have a very similar story. I was working on the floor, and one of the nurses in the palliative care team, Callie Simons, she's not here with us tonight, but she called me and informed me about the job and asked if I would be interested. And I would, like Michelle, what is palliative care? Mm-hmm. And then to be here and to work with these patients and to be given the honor to walk through the journey with them while they're in the hospital and to come up with a plan, hopefully going forward once they're discharged, has been a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Erin?
Yeah. Michelle has been my inspiration to work on the floor as a bedside nurse, to see what she does and to see how she was able to harbor what got me into nursing to begin with, which is truly focusing my attention on patient care and doing what was best for them. She inspired me to even desire to do this job. I never thought it was going to be a capability for me, especially being early on in my career. But here I am, and it just still, it feels like a dream. And it's because of Michelle. I will forever be grateful for her.
Wow. These nurses are truly handpicked. I think the same way Sister Brenda picked me. She, you know, you get called. You get called to do these things. You sit around, you think life is good, and I'm just going to do what I want to do with nursing for the rest of my life. And then somebody changes, the trajectory changes, and your direction is just to the moon. Mm-hmm. It's so inspiring. And to be not, we're not leaders. We're leaders in our own right. And that's probably what's made us a solid team, is that we don't step out and own each other. We own ourselves. Your nursing practice is yours, and you have got to live up to it.
Yeah,
and I think that's what's important for us, the four of us working the team.
It's very interesting. We all have the same goal, is to support these patients wherever they are. Some are angry, some are accepting of where they are. But to be able to do it in our own terms, because we all have different personalities. We all approach this differently, but we all seem to get to where we need to be with them. There's a blessing in that.
Mm-hmm. So what is palliative care?
Okay. It's pronounced both ways.
Okay.
Dr.
Okay. Warren.
It's,
thank
you. But it's a medical approach to care. And it provides support to people with a serious, chronic, life-threatening illness. I think that's important to remember, is that we are not end-of-life care nurses. We are beginning of serious diseases. When you come into the hospital, typically you don't have a broken fingernail. You have a serious, serious disease, whether it's an all systems from neurological with strokes, cardiac, respiratory, cancer, heart failure, kidney disease, you name it, we cover it. Mm. We cover a plethora of about on a daily basis. Our census can be out the moon, like 30 patients between four nurses, and we prioritize. We have to make sure that we see the patients that are needed. But palliative care does not replace your primary care treatment. Mm-hmm. It aligns with it. It supports it. And we like to call ourselves an extra layer of care in the hospital. We are that extra layer. It's just to help improve the quality of life when someone has a serious life-threatening illness.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to add to that? Or that was great. That was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
What type of illnesses? I know you did actually go into the different illnesses. What type of consults or requests do you get from families, providers, patients?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly varies. I know that, you know, there have been recent core measures that have been implemented in the hospital system, specifically patients with heart failure with an ejection fraction less than 40% automatically gets a consultation. Patients that have formally transitioned to a more inpatient hospice or comfort focused gets a consultation. But it truly is not even just a life-threatening, but a life-limiting illness that will warrant a palliative care consult. And furthermore, I mean, sometimes these people just need somebody to talk to, and they'll ask us to not just support the patient but their families. Mm-hmm. And it totally depends on the clientele that we have that specific day and the physicians working. I find it just – we kind of talk about it often about – you know, predicting these patient cases based upon the physician that puts the order in specifically, because we've grown to know what it is that they're looking for. And I think it kind of helps contribute to our ability to, you know, assist these patients more cohesively and effectively. And
I think the key point to what we do in palliative care is we're listeners.
Mm-hmm.
We are not there to put our opinions down their throat. We are absolute listeners. We sit, we listen, we try to formulate a plan based on what that patient's wishes are. Their goals, not mine, not the doctor's, not the family's, the patient's goals. And it's so important to recognize that and support that. Anytime we lose sight of that, I pull myself back and I go, so tell me what you want. How does this need to look for you?
Yes. And
wow.
And some of the difficulty in our job is helping them navigate what's realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So while there are certain things that they want done or certain goals that they want to achieve, how can we help them get as close to that or talk about what those goals might be need to be replaced with in a realistic version of going forward between now and the end of their lives.
That's good information. Well, we're going to take a quick break. commercial break, and we'll be right back.
It's April, time for Reading's biggest event of the year, Cool April Nights, April 17th through the 26th. Haven't registered your car yet? Now is the time. Head over to CoolAprilNights.com to register and click on the full schedule of events. 10 days of fun with 50 show and shines, 3 concerts, and the iconic cruise, followed by the biggest car show of them all on April 25th. Mark your calendars, make your plans, and visit Cool April Nights to get those cars registered. Cool April Nights, it's more than a car show, it's a tradition.
Northern California outdoor enthusiasts, get ready. The 2026 Redding Sportsman's Expo is presented by Crown Motors, Turner's Outdoorsman, and Elwood Ranch. Join us Saturday and Sunday, April 11th and 12th at the Redding Civic Auditorium. Doors are open to the public 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday. Explore the best in hunting gear, fly fishing tackle, boating, camping, kayaks, mountain bikes, off-road equipment, and more, all under one roof. Meet experts, check out the latest products, and plan your next epic trip with thousands of fellow enthusiasts. You won't want to miss the huge prize giveaways happening all weekend. Tickets are just $8 for adults, $6 for seniors. Kids 12 and under are free, and veterans are free on Sunday. The Redding Sportsman's Expo at the Redding Civic Auditorium, Saturday and Sunday, April 11th and 12th. This is an event you cannot miss. Redding Civic Auditorium, Saturday and Sunday, April 11th and 12th.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Imagine walking into your home and instantly feeling relaxed because the colors are fresh, clean, and exactly your style. That's what Eagle Eye Painting does for homeowners every day. Careful prep, protecting your furniture and floors, and a smooth, beautiful finish you'll be proud to show off. We're local, licensed, bonded, insured, and we're happy to help you in English or Spanish. Ready to fall in love with your home again? Call Eagle Eye Painting today at 530-410-1317 for a free, friendly estimate. That's 530-410-1317 or visit 530painter.com.
Welcome back to Behind the Pink Mic. This is Dr. Lauren, and this show is supported by Swell Endeavors. The benefits of lymphedema physical therapy are reducing swelling and pain, increase immune function, prevent infection and fibrosis, reduce the risk of certain cancers, and improve overall function. For more information, call 530-241-1900. Welcome back to Behind the Pink Mic. We have in the studio our Dignity or Mercy Hospital inpatient care, palliative care nurses. And before we get started, I'd like to know more about what's the difference between hospice care and palliative care?
So as we talk about palliative care, we are talking about the interdisciplinary team working with making sure that we're focused on the quality of life of our patients. And under the umbrella of palliative care, you will find hospice care, but it is not the same. Our focus is not the same. Hospice is focused on end-of-life care. So we're not looking for anything curative any longer. We're truly there to make sure that any discomfort or any stress is treated, whether that be in the hospital or at home. So oftentimes people will get the two confused. We are all certified in hospice and palliative care, but in our roles, we are palliative care nurses. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we will have to say, because it's startling for patients when they hear palliative care, if they only associate it with hospice, we will have to say, I am not a hospice nurse, not in this role, but we can provide that support too. We can provide the education needed.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. And then for hospice care, is it generally like within like less than 6 months of end of life, like the expectation, not expectation, but,
right.
You know.
And, of course, physicians are not God, but they can predict based on multiple comorbidities whether a patient is going to live more than 6 months and if treatment is reasonable. Mm-hmm. If somebody's goals have changed, for instance, they were diagnosed with a cancer and they've been on treatment for a long time, and the oncologist has maybe said things aren't going the way we plan, we'd like to consider that treating you, continuing to treat you, will do more harm than good. And that's part of the Hippocratic Oath. You know that already. Don't do no harm. And so then a doctor might have that discussion and say, we are suggesting, we're hoping that you will think about this realistically. Spend whatever time you have with your family with quality and dignity. But continuing treatment where your counts are reduced and things are tough and you're just not doing well, let's not do that anymore. Usually with hospice, the life expectancy is 6 months or less. But people graduate in a hospice program. They get different semesters, I call it. Mm-hmm. And one gentleman called me once way back, and he was very upset that he was fired by hospice. And I said, well, I think it's a good thing. You're alive. They fired you because you didn't die. And he was just so grateful to hear those words. He goes, what do you mean I didn't die? I said, well, you didn't. You got three different trials of hospice and you didn't die. So we're not here to predict anybody's life, but we do know that it's very clear that palliative care is advocating for their wishes. Continuing treatment, even though everybody else goes, why are they doing that? Because it's their life and because they want to. Mm-hmm. And we honor that. Whether you like it or not, we honor that. And as palliative care nurses, we get in there and we advocate for this patient, unless it's entirely unrealistic medically for them to continue treatment. I do want to talk about one thing that I thought about, that palliative care never stops asking the hard questions. We have to. We don't have a choice when we go in, because that's how change happens. We're the ones who say, Fred, what is it that you want? Tell me. And the family's in the background, and I always tell them, I see you, but I don't hear you, because I have to listen to Fred. His voice is what I need to listen to now. And I always tell them, don't make me have to listen to 10 voices. I only need one, and it's Fred.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. I think I told you, Michelle, before about my own personal experience with my father. He really just wanted palliative care. He wanted to continue, and there were some other people in the room that didn't feel like he needed that. They wanted him to move forward to hospice. Mm-hmm. You know, and as a daughter and as a physician, mm-hmm. you know, my thought was, you know, let him choose. This is his time to make that decision. And if he's ready to move on to the next, then he's ready. But mm-hmm. let him live his life the way he wants to live it out.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And what a huge thing that you could stop being a physician at that time and just be a daughter.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's part of it, is that people battle with their roles at these difficult life decisions. They battle, and they shouldn't have to. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have to. The daughter who's the physician needs to step back and just say, what does my dad want? I will honor his wishes until the end of his life.
Yeah, because things change.
Oh, yeah.
People change. They change their mind. Their situations change.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Absolutely.
And I think sometimes when you're provided a diagnosis, people start to identify with that diagnosis. So they're no longer seen as an individual, but their whatever terminal illness that they're living with or life-limiting. Excuse me. So it does provide an opportunity for us to refocus on the fact that they are an individual and that they do have needs and desires and wishes, and all of those things truly can be attainable without hyper-focusing on the end of life. There's a whole journey in between that we got to get through, and how do we do it most effectively?
I think that's a important, very important point, is that we care for the person as a human being. We're not there to treat disease. We're there to work with a physician to help manage the symptoms and advocate for them to feel better. But we are there to look beyond that breast cancer diagnosis and heart failure and kidney disease and see the human being that's in that bed in a hospital gown that's covered with these linens that don't quite match their taste. It's not home. We try to create home, and we try to see that person as that human life that we have been entrusted to help to care for.
Yeah, I think that's really holistic.
Yes.
You know, in the approach to the human being, mm-hmm. and not just the disease.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think it's easy to get caught up in that in the medical field.
Yes.
But we're all human beings, mm-hmm. here on a journey.
Yeah.
I think you bring up a good point. it changes. People's wishes change. So we encourage them to start thinking about that when they do get these diagnoses, when they are on a cycle of hospitalizations. What do you want this to look like? And it may change. And we're here to try to support that as well as possible. Right.
And I don't think people honestly realize that just because you can doesn't always mean that you should, that there are alternatives to what's medically available. And we're just here to talk about that, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have an example of a patient you would treat? Like, can you run me through a scenario?
Of a patient that would...
That you might get a referral, a call, and how you would approach that patient based on their diagnosis, their situation.
Yeah, I think one of the most important patients that we get to is like a patient with cancer who truly doesn't have a formal cancer diagnosis because we haven't done a biopsy. You can't treat patients with cancer without a biopsy. You can't just arbitrarily pull from the sky this group of things that you're going to do for them. So we align with these newly diagnosed patients, and we try to figure out, what did you ever think about in the past? When you were watching television and you saw that person with a new diagnosis of something, what came to your mind? And then we get to think about all the collaboration that we need to have with different entities, physicians, nurses, physical therapists, etc., interventional radiology. Let's get this patient to where they and their families have an understanding. Then we can get down to brass tacks and talk about what their wishes are.
Yes.
You want to add to that, Mary? Or?
Your question was about what does that look like? So when the doctors recognize, or even the nurses, when they recognize there's a concern that a family might need some support, or the doctor has, we're waiting on a biopsy, then that's when typically they'll call us in to say, okay, and we need to follow their clinical progression and help them figure out what is it that this looks like. It can change, but we're there, one, to support them, because this is a very scary time, and that Michelle was talking about how we're the listeners. We try to go in there and make sure we're listening, and also just focusing their individuals. They're likely hungry, in pain, scared, and it's easy. I mean, as nurses are busy, and so we're blessed to be able to give them some of our time. Mm-hmm. When I first started this job, Sister Brenda, I remember saying, some days you might just see one patient, which hasn't been a reality, but to be able to focus on someone like that in this time.
Yeah. And how do you balance that with family members who, you know, you got the daughter, the son, the wife, the husband coming in, and everybody has, I know, you know, we said we got to listen to Fred, but there's these different forces coming in, and not everybody's on the same page about what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we oftentimes find that nobody's on the same page. And I think that, you know, when we talk about palliative care, there's a big emotional, spiritual component to it. But we're also clinical registered nurses, and so we do have a lot of understanding as far as some of these disease processes go and the predictabilities that we have with whatever process that we're talking about. And sometimes it really is just about empathizing with them and putting yourself in their shoes. Like, I get that this is dad, and I understand that this is hard. And sometimes when we're having a conversation, there doesn't truly need to be a goal. There could just be a conversation. And I think not trying to get to the finish line prematurely and just taking it day by day and meeting the family where they're at can be absolutely appropriate. And I find oftentimes that if we're having, you know, tumultuous family dynamic issues, take your time. Just take your time. It's their life. It's not anything that we need to be taking, you know, lightheartedly.
Absolutely. I think Mary today said to me, we meet the families where they are, wherever they are. That's just it. We don't structure this. We just go in and we're right there. Where are they? And we have to try our best, because sometimes you'll get your best conversations are had on a golf course or someplace where you know somebody, so we try to normalize the conversation. Mm-hmm. Make it reasonable so that once we're talking about silly stuff, today I had a patient who just needed to have his lungs tapped, and that was the first thing. I couldn't have a conversation because he was having trouble breathing. Mm. Once the interventional radiologist got in and did the tap, he was free to chatter, and we laughed about different things. And You know, seeing the big picture for us is what we need to do.
Yeah.
We come in with this little tiny focus. We get a consult that says palliative care request for a goal of care discussion, advanced directives, code status. Those are the big predominant ones that we get. And then we go in and we sit down. That's the rule. Sit down. Do not tower over that patient. That's not your job. You're not God. You're not holier than thou, bigger than them, like a mountain. Sit down and make eye contact. And sometimes we slink down so we're lower than them, so they feel in charge. That's mm-hmm. a very important body dynamic that we use in palliative care, and it works. Even when the doctors walk in the door, I go, there's a chair, please sit down. And they go, I'm really busy, Michelle. I'm sorry. You have to sit down. Those are the rules of the room.
Yeah.
And they do. Mm-hmm. They listen because they're honoring that human life.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know what? When we come back from the commercial break, let's mm-hmm. talk about the code status, the advanced directives, and all those things so that people can have an idea of what to expect.
Okay.
All right.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
Hi, this is Carrie Grawl. This season marks a new chapter for Organic Pilates, a rebirth of sorts in a new, larger downtown space. Alongside it, we want to introduce you to Harmony, a lifestyle boutique created as a natural extension of how we move and live with intention. We want to invite you in. Harmony and Organic Pilates, now open in downtown Reading. We're located at 1264 California Street in between Curated and Theory Coffee. We can't wait to see you.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
This is my fight song. Take back my life.
Join us Saturday, May 2nd, for the annual Chicks and Chaps Luncheon at the Senior Center in Redding, California, a day dedicated to raising awareness and support for breast cancer programs in our community. It's a day filled with connection and purpose. Be a part of something truly special. Go to RedingRodeo.com and click on the Chicks and Chaps tab for your tickets today. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Redding Rancheria, Valor Oncology, Goldmark Jewelers, KCNR Radio, and Four Winds Jewelry.
This is my fight.
Welcome. Welcome back to Behind the Pink Mic. Michelle's dancing to the fight song.
Yes, she is.
I'm so glad this is radio.
Right? We have a hidden camera over here. Yes, welcome back to Behind the Pink Mic. This show is supported by Swell Endeavors. And so we're going to get into the code status, and they'll explain to our listeners what that means, code status, and then the advanced directives will go into that. But these are some of the things that are important when you're in the hospital. People need to know, how do we treat you if something happens? Do we do chest compressions, or do we do nothing? Do we put you on a ventilator to help you breathe, support you for some time period? So, Erin, do you want to start off with code status and how we establish that with patients?
Yeah, I mean, it probably is brought up in every conversation that we have, and I think that we can all agree that there's definitely a misconception between what it is that you see on television regarding being a full code and receiving chest compressions versus the realities of what's appropriate. I think that most generally, we oftentimes look at the big clinical picture and would chest compressions be appropriate in certain situations? Chest compressions truly are. It's a broken sternum. It's broken ribs. You're trying to manually restart that heart in order to bring life back into a dead person. Mm-hmm. And when you do achieve that, you know, circulation, it's not at the point you were before you arrested. It's quite a few steps below that. And so you're not even back to baseline once your heart gets going again. And then there's a whole, you know, set of treatment plans after that even occurs. Sometimes it can honestly be quite barbaric, and there are definitely situations where that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. But there are certainly more situations that we see than not where maybe that isn't appropriate, that maybe if a natural death is going to occur, that we honor and support that as well. And so education's a really big deal, because in the same breath, a no resuscitation, a DNR, it doesn't mean that we're done treating. It doesn't mean that we're thrown in the towel and sending you home with hospice. Mm-hmm. It truly means let's do what's medically appropriate for you based upon what your clinical diagnosis is while you're here in the hospital. Yeah. I'm going to open and turn it over.
I think one of the important things is that people never want to talk about this until the crisis happens. Mm-hmm. They have got to. We have got to have a community that is clear, that's having discussions with their family, that are creating the documents that are necessary. And just to clarify, we've got two important documents that we are involved with. One's called the California Advanced Directive, and that's done by a competent patient, which means that the patient is able to decide what they would want, choice not to resuscitate or prolong my life, or choice to prolong, and naming that surrogate decision maker. If you don't name a surrogate decision maker, somebody that can speak for you when your voice goes away, you're wasting your time. Because you come into the emergency room quite ill, and you're deferred to a full code, which means no matter what your diagnosis is, unless a prudent physician or nurse or somebody asks this question, you're going to have CPR, as Erin described. Chest compressions, you're going to be cardioverted or shocked, and you're going to be placed on a ventilator. If you have thoughts about that at any time, please speak to your family. So one is the California Advanced Directive. The other is the Physician Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment. It's abbreviated to a POLST, a POLST. And you want to think about it as like the pulse of your body. It tells doctors and nurses what to do, specifically doctors, because they're responsible for your care. And there are three simple sections, CPR or no.
And CPR, can you define that for our listeners?
Oh, yes, yeah. I'm sorry. Cardiopulmonary resuscitation, which means, as Erin described, chest compressions, shocking, and intubation, the full gamut. And, you know, a lot of people go, well, I want this, but I don't want that. It's a package deal. We start CPR, we start, and we don't stop until you're intubated and you're in the ICU. So these are discussions that we encourage you to have with your families and loved ones, and especially designate somebody who will speak for you. Not necessarily the person that you think should, but the person that will. Okay? There are a lot of people, I get these couples, and my husband has no idea or my wife has no idea, and we've never talked about it. Well, you're 80. It's about time you do. Mm-hmm. And I do say things like that. I have to tell you, we have to talk about it today because I'm here, and I don't want them to do anything to you that you wouldn't want.
So when I am talking about code status, I will my first question always is, do you know what code status means? Because that's a big deal. Because you'll hear that, and sometimes there's a panic, and so I will explain, that is your instruction to us on what you would want us to do if your heart stopped right now or if your lungs failed. So we just try to keep it basic there. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we'll hear, well, I want to live. But that's not our question. Our question is, how do you want to live? Would you want us to do all of these heroic interventions? TV makes it look easy, for lack of a better word, but for someone who's 34 kilos, the likelihood that she would survive the assault of CPR, of the chest compressions, of going down two and a half inches.
34 kilos, what, is that a small person?
That is a small person.
It's a small person.
Someone like a little over 2 pounds each.
You could crack some ribs or things like that. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then people also say, well, I would want you to try if there's a chance for me to survive, or if I'm going to be a vegetable, then don't. Mm-hmm. We don't know. And so that's when we need to talk about, what are your wishes? What would you want us to do? And a lot of times, I think we've said this already, we're some of the first people that bring that up. And so we encourage that conversation. We're not trying to rush them into a decision, but we need to give them that education.
Mm-hmm. And how do you break that down into, I think you said there's three areas, so how do you break that down into, like fluids only, or, you know, like the options that people have?
Well, the post is very clear, and it gives us a good idea. This first section is whether you want CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or not. Yes or no. Real simple. The second one is, do you want us to do everything, including CPR? Or do you want selective things? Would you not want to be intubated, but you're okay with IV fluids, antibiotics, and, say, dialysis, whatever is being offered by the medical team?
So intubated meaning?
Putting you on a machine that breathes for you, a ventilator. Mm-hmm. The dialysis is for kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is another option called comfort-focused treatment. For instance, a family has been caring for their loved one forever and realize that the returning to the hospital is just not what they want. They want to be home with their dogs and their smells and everything, their paintings on the wall, their grandchildren, and they just don't want to come back. Or their disease is too progressive to be managed in a home. So we go with comfort-focused care, which means we're managing very aggressively in an acute hospital negative symptoms until the end of life.
Okay, so that comfort-focused care is still palliative care.
Yes.
But it's almost like a fine line between hospice care, in a sense?
Sometimes I want to have comfort care and hospice be synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like families to start thinking about it as end-of-life care. Our goal is not to change the outcome or cure somebody. Our goal is to manage pain, nausea, anxiety, restlessness, sleeplessness, respiratory distress, so that families can sit with their loved ones either in the hospital or at home if we can get it done, and help them as they transition into dying.
Mm. We had a doctor that we worked with who stopped using comfort-focused care. She focused on the word hospice because there's an acceptance in that person is at the end of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So how do we make you comfortable? How do we make this quality between now and whenever that is?
Right. And sometimes there's a big misnomer. Patients will say, I want to be comfortable. And our role is to find out exactly what you mean.
What does comfortable mean to you?
Do you want us to continue with antibiotics? Do you want to continue dialysis after how many years you've been on it? If it's helping you, by all means, this is your decision. But what does being comfortable mean? So we have to be very clear about what patients and their families mean, especially the patients.
And then how do you document that?
Oh, boy. Documentation. Well, we're there many, many hours.
Yeah.
Because if you did it and didn't write it, it absolutely wasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to document very clearly what patients' wishes are.
Yeah.
On the chart, and there's a palliative care note, there's a palliative care assessment on the chart, and we're finding that doctors now know where to look, and it's their go-to.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of their go-to because it's whole person care. It covers emotional, physical, spiritual care, and they can find that documentation, hopefully, in a good palliative care consult note.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Anything you want to add to that? We're getting ready to go to commercial break, but is there anything else you want to add to that?
No, I think it just kind of emphasizes the role that we have in particular. It's a big responsibility to have these conversations, and even though we have them every day, it's always unique to the individual that we're speaking to or their families. Mm-hmm. So it truly is an honor to do what we do.
And it becomes easier, or are there situations where it's sometimes it's a huge challenge?
Oh, yeah. Oh, if you're not being challenged, you got to get out and do something.
You got to leave this job.
Yeah.
this ministry, as I should say. You, if you're not challenged, you're not in the right role here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Every day, every moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, ladies. All right. We'll be right back with Behind the Pink Mic.
Shasta Lake and neighboring friends, the Queen of Dragons has your back with premium products at prices that work for you. As the longest standing dispensary in the area, our local team knows exactly what you need. Our shelves are stocked with the freshest flower in town. From our premium, fresh, and local line to our budget-friendly options featuring Emerald Junkies and Tricana Boys. Don't miss our famous Flower Friday deals. Top quality at unbeatable prices. And for the green thumbs out there, clones are now in store for the growing season. Join our Dragons Reward program and earn points with every purchase. Stop by 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake or call us for delivery at 530-276-9771 or check out our menu at thequeenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons, premium offerings, unbeatable value just for you.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Oliva Melano Maduro. From the verdant fields of Jalapa, Nicaragua, comes an epic 95-rated cigar, wrapped in a Maduro leaf from San Andres. Expect notes of espresso, anise, and walnut liqueur. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
KCNR has teamed up with Michelle Slade from My Umbrella Marketing to give you a chance to win tickets to the Red Bluff Roundup. The drawing is at 8 a.m. on Friday, April 10th. For your chance to qualify, all you have to do is listen for this.
Hit 'em up, move 'em on, hit 'em up, rawhide. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, cut 'em out, ride 'em in rawhide.
Then call 530-605-4566 or 530-605-4567 for your chance to qualify to win two tickets to the Red Bluff Roundup. The drawing is at 8 a.m. on Friday, April 10th, courtesy of Michelle Slade from My Umbrella Marketing and your friends here at KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
Welcome back to Behind the Pink Mic. This show is sponsored by Swell Endeavors, where lymphedema care is compassion and healing, and Sizzle's Kitchen, where culinary arts meets community. Okay, we're in our last segment. We were just talking about over the break how they go so fast. Such good information for our listeners. How does the palliative care team work as far as, you know, the other services? You know, there's so many different services. How does it all come together to help a patient prepare for discharge planning, you know, preparing to go home, those types of things?
It truly is dynamic. I mean, we are specifically talking about palliative care, but we wouldn't be able to do what we do without all of the interdisciplinaries that we work with, from the social workers and the discharge spiritual care team, the physicians, of course, and even each other. We really rely on each other for support as well.
Yes.
I think your point is we collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
We collaborate tremendously. Mm-hmm. There is no one is an island. We have to reach out to each other. We have to respect each other's expertise. There's some things that I can't touch. I have no idea what you're talking about, and I need to get care coordination, or I need to get a social worker in here to help you. So the most important thing is that as a team, mm-hmm. collaborating together, we place that patient's wishes and needs at the top. Not our needs, their needs. And we call the forces in, I call them the forces, as we need to. Palliative care is driven by physicians, and I think everybody forgets that your primary care can tell you about palliative care in an outpatient setting. It's when they come into the hospital and they're so sick, doctors go, please get in there as soon as you can. And we'll tell them, I can't do this alone. I need social work. We need care coordination, discharge planners to get involved fast. Things at home aren't great. We may need skilled nursing facility placement, like a nursing home, because the family can't manage anymore. They're tanking. Mm-hmm. They're exhausted, and they cannot do this. So it is to honor and dignify that patient's wishes. It takes a full group of people.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
And I would include, like, physical therapy, wound care.
Dietitians.
And their nutrition, oxygen therapy, those kind of home things.
Yes,
respiratory.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And the pharmacist, you know, medications to make sure that we're treating and following. Somebody comes in with a long-term infection that is a palliative care patient, we make sure that the infectious disease physicians consider a long-term line. They go home on antibiotics, and we follow them. And each time they come in, it's not a defeat. It's an honor to care for them. It's like, you're here,
yeah.
I'm here. Let's do this.
Yes. And sometimes these patients, they'll come back in through the emergency room or things like that. Mm-hmm. They'll bounce back.
Yes.
Do you see that often?
Quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Erin covers the ICU, and mm-hmm. we cover all the rest of the floors, and Erin oftentimes steps out from the ICU and covers with us. So we do see people coming back. It's not because they're being malicious. It's because they're very ill. Mm-hmm. We expect them to come back, and we may not have solved things on that first go-around, but we're certainly going to step back in and try to do our best again.
Mm-hmm. Wow. How do you handle the cultural differences?
That's an interesting concept. I think that's where my listening skills are so important. What's important to you? Mm. What is your spiritual or your cultural affiliation? I remember a patient once at Loma Linda asking to have his bed turned towards Mecca, and I had to run outside and say, does anybody know where Mecca is?
Mm.
And we did. We successfully moved that bed around to honor his spiritual mm-hmm. and cultural wishes. So I think that, and we are seeing more diversity, more cultural diversity here in Reading, and we're grateful for that. We really are, because there was a time where Reading was pretty much cut and paste. It was what it was. Now we have to honor people's spiritual affiliations, or atheistic or agnostic. We honor that. We're not there to change your religion. We're there to listen to what you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And we have strong support from the chaplaincy, too.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And who is that? The chaplain at the hospital?
The director.
There's
a team.
Mm-hmm. There's a team.
And we used to have a lot more chaplains. We're down to
three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wow.
And the director. And it is a thankless task. As soon as we see a palliative care patient, we generate to the chaplains immediately. Mm-hmm. And they come in right after.
Oh, they do.
And those guys fool around. They're right there
okay.
supporting those patients, because mm-hmm. the conversations we have are difficult, and sometimes all you can do is call on that person's God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I just recently learned from from one of the chaplains that for, say, a Jehovah's Witness who they can opt not to take blood. That's part of
blood products.
The blood products. And they have support in their community. And they have medical advocates that will help doctors connect. So doctors connect with theirs so that they can help manage anemia, a low blood count. So it's interesting. There's just a lot of information. We're always learning.
But
being open to that and finding that out, finding out that you are a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah, we do talk about that too before surgery, and sometimes they'll give me a card of a website I can go to, and there's a library of information. So it's nice when patients are their own advocates from that standpoint.
Absolutely.
And want to say, hey, I need you to help me through this.
Yes.
And this is what you can do.
But it takes a very brave physician to do that. Someone who stops and takes the time to say, I'm your surgeon, but I need to know what's important to you. Tell me what you want. If post-op we have any bleeding issues, are you, and it does, it takes that physician, because oftentimes we're seeing these patients post-op when something happened or whatever, but that physician going in there, having that conversation up front is important.
That is true. Now, in the ICU, do you find some of the issues a little bit different than the floor? I'm sure there are some differences, but are there any distinct differences with the ICU patients?
I think that...
Because you're not necessarily talking to the patient.
Exactly.
You know?
So I think the family dynamic issues, although we come across them, they seem to be much more frequent in the ICU. And so you are having to talk to the family to get to know this patient that can't talk about themselves. They are on a breathing machine. They are critically ill. So being able to, I think first and foremost, in order for me to appropriately advocate for this patient, it's about having a conversation about who were you before you got sick. And it kind of helps establish a rapport with these families because they're scared. They're vulnerable. They see somebody that they love in front of them and they feel helpless. So allowing them to have autonomy in a situation, and even if that autonomy is just talking proudly about the person that they care about in bed, it brings a lot of joy to them and helps them kind of piece together the puzzle that's going on in front of them without, you know, because it helps them refocus on the patient in particular. And then in the same breath, we have a clientele in Shasta County where we have a lot of unrepresented patients as well. So having to open up the can of worms about who are they based upon the very little information that we have, it can be quite emotionally taxing. It's a big endeavor. But we wouldn't be able to do it without this dynamic team that we have of the social workers and the care coordinators and the physicians and just the amount of advocacy that we provide for these patients, even when they don't have a spokesperson for them.
Yeah, I think that's cool because it reminds me of, you know, why you go into medicine. You know, you get that human connection and really be there for the patient. It's not just like counting numbers, right? How many patients can you see? It's really a connection.
Quality over quantity. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You nailed it because that's our favorite thing is we may not see as many patients as you want us to, but we are doing quality assessments. Yeah. We're going in there and we're giving it everything. And when we come out from a palliative care consult, physicians have something to work with. One of my favorite things is to ask the patient, what did you do before you became ill or before you retired? It gives me an open window to their heart. And when I'm having that conversation, you can see them light up. They're interested.
Yeah, love that. Okay, well, this time went by pretty fast.
Yes, it did.
Yes, it did.
I want more, Dr. Strickland. We want more time.
We can come back.
Anytime.
Well, Mary, Michelle, and Aaron, thank you for coming on to the show this evening and educating us about palliative care. It was an honor to have you at my side or in front of me behind these pink microphones. And so I'd like to thank our listeners for listening. And this show will be aired on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. And you can also go to the archives to KCNR1460.com. on the website. And then also we're going to have the OR come into the studio next month. So tune in. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Strickland.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.